We want to welcome everybody to this live stream, and we're talking In the Trenches with Dave Lapham, brought to you by First Star Logistics, coming to you from our studio at First Star Logistics, as we always do, and we do appreciate their support. Without First Star Logistics, we got nothing, and welcoming this opportunity to catch up with the fans. Love to get the fans' perspective. You guys are educated. You guys have good questions. Very, very poignant questions, quite usually. So looking forward to it today. I want to hit on something, though. The big news, obviously, is Jesse Bates is coming back to the Cincinnati Bengals. He's reporting today, is the understanding. There's all kinds of lists. There's active pup lists. There's reserve pup lists. There's injury reserve. There's lists after lists after list. There's another list called the exempt list. And in situations like this, when there's been a holdout, it's happened before. A guy reports after a holdout as such, and they put him on an exempt list. So therefore, they can ramp him up. Because there's shape. And in my mind, there's no doubt that Jesse Bates looks great, and I'm sure he's in great shape. There's conditioning shape, and then there's football conditioning shape. And that's why the NFL has unpadded practices to start things off at training camp for multiple days, 4 or 5 days, no pads, no shoulder pads. So they want to prevent injuries, and they want to ramp it up physically, get them used to the football, get them used to the football conditioning. I think that's going to be the case with Jesse Bates. I don't think that he's going to walk into Paul Brown Stadium and be out on the field necessarily taking those reps against the Rams, but he's going to be getting the mental reps. And in my humble opinion, that's why he went to that suite. He didn't want to just watch the game on TV. TV, obviously, you're limited to what the cameras are showing you. When you're watching a game from a suite or a press box, you can see the whole field. You can see the sideline. You can see communication going on between coaches and players. You can see things that the TV shot may not give you. I mean, a lot of times it's not as wide as it should be for Jesse to take advantage of things that he could see firsthand. So he got a literally, quote, a bird's eye view of the game from the suite. I think that's one of the big reasons that he did go to the suite. So got some mental reps there, actually watching the game. Now he's going to be on the practice field, communicating with teammates, communicating with coaches, seeing the calls and seeing and hearing calls that are being made, what adjustments are being made out on the football field based on formations and all the things the Rams are going to be doing, all the situational stuff that's going to happen during those controlled scrimmage practices with the LA Rams. It's going to be everything. It's going to be a lot of situational stuff, third down, red zone, low red zone, backed up from a field position standpoint, you name it. They're going to work on it, and it's going to be scripted. So during the course of a game, you may hit on 3 of 6 that you're looking for from a situational standpoint. The flow of the game dictated that you didn't necessarily have those kind of things. A 2-minute drill to end a half, a 2-minute drill to end a game, all of those type of things you may have or have not experienced during that game. But in this controlled environment for a 2-day period, you can hit everything, every situation possible that you're going to confront during the course of a football game and hit it for multiple reps. Jesse Bates will be able to witness that physically, get them, not physically, mentally, get the mental reps. I think that they're going to use, I think it's a 2-week roster exemption is what guys get after holdouts. I think that's what it's been in the past. And I think they'll probably implement it. And then Jesse will be ready to go for game week in preparation for the Pittsburgh Steelers and probably contribute in some way, shape, or form. The good news is that Dax Hill is playing at such a high level, it gives you a very, very comforting feeling that you don't have to rush Jesse Bates out for a myriad of snaps or all the snaps necessarily. You can rotate him in and out of various packages. You can also utilize 3 safeties. I'm telling you, the 3 safeties that the Cincinnati Bengals put out in the football field, Von Bell, Jesse Bates, and Dax Hill, that trio is as good as any group of safeties in the National Football League, and they're all young. they're all not in the back nine. They're all either rookies like Dax Hill or veterans in the prime of their career like Von Bell and Jesse Bates. It's a good situation. It's like the trio at wide receiver, as good as there is in the National Football League. Trio at safety, as good as there is in the National Football League. Gives Lou Anarumo a lot of flexibility. He can run multiple three safety packages because Dax Hill, he's already played him at slot corner. He's already had him blitzing off the edge as a slot corner. He's already had him in coverage. And the thing is, all three of these safeties are not a liability in coverage. They're all very decent coverage people that can make plays on a football. Dax Hill gets his hands on footballs. Got his hands on two footballs in the first preseason game. Got his hands on the football here in the second preseason game and got his first interception. Doesn't count on his official career stats, but he's showing the ability to make plays, to close on the football. He's got exceptional closing speed. There's no question about it. So get him as many snaps as you can. Keep expanding his role and get as many good players on the football field as you possibly can. Decide what's your best package. You know, you've got good corners. You have good safeties. Do you have more good safeties than you have good corners? Maybe you're going to overload at the safety position in some packages. Maybe you go more safeties in other packages. I mean, three safeties, two corners, three safeties, three corners, and the dime. The nickel could be three safeties, two corners, or it could be three corners, two safeties. It gives Lou Anarumo so much flexibility and versatility because these guys can play multiple positions. They're positionless players in today's terminology in the National Football League. So it's good news. Glad to see that Jesse Bates is back. And, you know, at some point in time during the course of a 17-game season, somebody's potentially going to get nicked up because these safeties, they come downhill and they'll tackle. They're very physical in tackling. Dax Hill has shown that. He's a very good tackler. Von Bell, Jesse Bates, all of them will get people on the ground and get them on the ground in a very physical nature. So you can never have enough good defensive backs. You can never have enough good cover corners. You can never have enough versatile safeties. And the Cincinnati Bengals are you know, getting to a situation where they've got some good depth. Now, the cornerback position, like we're talking about, some notes on other players during that preseason game that I had. Let's see. Taking a look on the back end, I thought Alan George, I thought he played really well. In fact, with Cam Taylor-Britt on the shelf a little bit because he had that surgery on the core muscle. I think that right now, Alan George is making a run to assume that role that Cam Taylor-Britt had. While Cam Taylor-Britt is out, they need somebody to step up and take that spot that he was going to play, the role he was going to play in Lou Anarumo's defense as another corner. The way Alan George played, smart kid from Vanderbilt, played very, very well. I thought he was more than solid. He may say, you know what? Give me that role. I want that role. I want to be part of this. He made a statement in the last preseason game. Delonte Hood, the other rookie, struggled a little bit in my eyes. He had a poorer night. There's no doubt. I didn't think he played quite as well as Alan George played or even close to the way Alan George played. Again, you don't make an evaluation on one game. You look at the whole body of work, practice, other games, the whole nine yards. But Alan George basically said, you know what? There's a role to be had. Cam Taylor-Britt got nicked up. I don't wish injury on anybody, but I am going to try to take advantage of snaps given to me to fill this role. And in my mind, that's what he did. Cordell Volson wasn't perfect. You know, there was a slot corner blitz that they had that Cordell Volson probably got out there a little bit late in terms of picking it up. That's correctable. That's a mental thing as much as anything else. But overall, I thought he played very, very well. I thought he was very, very solid. He's really good in the running game. He locked on people and he finished people. He is a finisher. He wants to not just block you, he wants to obliterate you if he can. He wants to embarrass you if he can. He's made of the right stuff. I think there's no question about it. Now, pass protection, I think, you know, he can still work on some things, finishing some things from a technique standpoint in his pass protection. He grades out really well, in my opinion, as a run blocker, though. And I think that he made a statement. You know, I mean, you have a scenario where Jackson Carmen had COVID, had a COVID-19 problem, and, you know, protocol said he couldn't play, so he didn't even travel. And, you know, I said in the pregame show on the radio, why not play Volson the whole game at left guard? Let him take every snap. Let him see what it looks like at, and look to see what he looks like at the left guard position. Now, could he have won the starting job at the left guard position based on his performance? I think he's closer. I think he's closer. It is going to be a dog fight against the Rams, not only in the Rams game, because they're both going to play in the game, Volson and Jackson Carmen, but those 2 weeks, those 2 days of practice during the week where it's going to be controlled, but very, very physical at a very high tempo. And you're going to be going against a guy, number 99, defensive tackle. He's pretty good. Guy named Aaron Donald. Yeah, I think he can play. Going against that guy, that's whoever performs against him better, that's a tiebreaker. So the Rams defense has got great personnel, and it's well put together from a configuration and schematic standpoint. Who's going to perform the best? It right now, I thought the left guard position was a coin toss, toss-up. I'm kind of leaning toward Volson right now, but you're going to have to go and finish it. You're going to have to go and play well against the Rams in the two practices and that game, in the preseason game against the Rams. And Jackson Carmen is not going to give it up. Jackson Carmen started training camp as the starter. So, I mean, it's a battle. It's a battle royale. But I don't think Volson eliminated himself by any stretch of the imagination with what he did in the last preseason encounter. There's no two ways about that. I thought he more than held his own against the Giants, and he was working against that number one defensive unit. And that's a pretty good defense. They got some pretty good personnel. That's a solid, sound NFL defensive front seven, and he performed well. So I give him the tip of the cap. I thought that opportunity knocked, and he opened the door. He answered it. He didn't shy away from it. Let's put it that way. He didn't leave it knocking. You know, he opened the door and said, "Let my opportunity in," and he went after it as well as he possibly could. Wide receiver Kwame Lassiter, I thought, played well. He had a huge drop, though. Obviously, that drop he had in the back of the end zone on the 2-point conversion is something that is going to stick in his craw. And is the first thing everybody's going to think about. But I do think that he ran good routes. Wink Martindale didn't blitz as much as I thought he might, but he did blitz frequently enough where wide receivers were facing man coverage and had to show they had the ability to get some separation, run good, solid, precise, sound routes. And Kwame Lassiter did that. And so did Kendrick Pryor. Kendrick Pryor took advantage of opportunity as well. And you got a battle going on there. If they decide to, will they unseat an incumbent? I mean, that's not an easy task, because special teams are going to be the determining factor on who is the extra person at running back, at wide receiver, at defensive back, linebacker, positions like that. You're not just competing against the other wide receivers in the room when you're trying to get one of the positions from roster spots, say number 47 to 53, those last six roster spots. You're not just competing with wide receivers. You're competing with the final defensive backs, the final linebackers, the final wide receivers that are in your room. I mean, you're competing against a bunch of guys. So the first step, though, is when you get your opportunity to show that you can make plays, when you get your snaps on either offense or defense, you got to step up and make them. Because if you don't take advantage there, special teams, it's not quite as much of a tiebreaker, because it may not get the special teams. It's like, we can't use this guy in offense or defense whatsoever. This other guy, we can. But Darren Simmons, what a challenge he had. I mean, he had a huge challenge in that preseason game against the Giants, because once again, 20 of the 22 starters didn't even see the field. They had over 30 players that didn't even dress, you know, play in the football game. they only had like 54 guys. There's almost like an NFL regular season roster game. They didn't deactivate seven, but they didn't have a ton of guys to work with. So without those guys taking snaps offensively or defensively, backup players were taking them. And now Darren has to be smart and not giving them overload of special team snaps, because that's not fair. They're going to die. I mean, you can't do it. I mean, and perform at the level that Darren wants you to perform at. So now there's a trickle-down effect. Those backup players are starting and taking, quote, starter snaps. So now other guys are taking special team snaps. You got to make sure that the guys that are taking snaps, though, and also special team snaps, don't get abused, which Clay Johnston did. I mean, Clay Johnston, he took 75 snaps defensively or somewhere in that range, and he took, his share of special team snaps. This guy was a warrior. He had 20 tackles, 16 unassisted of the 75 snaps. The dude was in on over a quarter of the plays he made the play on or was involved in making the play on. Everything the Giants ran, Johnston was the guy that was involved in eliminating it or finishing it, finalizing it. Unbelievable effort. Dead tired. Talking to him after the game. Yeah, I'll fall asleep on the plane. Man, I guess you will. You're gonna be sleeping a lot to recover from that performance. I mean, he was dragging himself off the football field. He was struggling to get to his feet. And that's what Darren was trying to avoid in as many places as he possibly could, not overuse of a guy. But if Clay Johnston doesn't make the football team, what? What more does the guy have to do? I mean, he basically cut his chest open and laid his heart out in the football field for the Cincinnati Bengals. I think Clay Johnston obviously makes the football team. But that's the kind of thing that you're talking about. Special teams, snaps are huge. And in this final preseason game, Darren's going to have to do another juggling act. There's going to be a lot of guys that aren't going to play. How am I going to make sure that the guys that are trying to show themselves offensively and defensively take some special team snaps to show me they can play, but I don't want to overload them and burden their effort to try to show that they can play offense or defensive snaps. It's tough. It's a tough juggling act, but he's going to have to do it. And this isn't his first rodeo. He's been doing this for 20 years. It's been the same way every year. The decision-making on those final spots are always driven by special teams. And now in today's NFL, when starters aren't playing, half the league is that way. The Bengals and the Rams are both in the half of the league that I'm not going to play our starters. The other half of the league, more old school, we're going to play our starters at least a quarter, sometimes maybe a quarter and a half, two quarters, whatever the case may be. But Darren's doing some serious juggling now. But special teams are going to have a huge, huge impact on what Kwame Lassiter, as a returner, what can he do as a returner? But speaking of returner, do you think Evans earned a spot? I mean, 2 weeks in a row. One kick return of over 40, another one of over 70. Yeah, I'd say so. I'd say Evans has earned his spot now. But you only keep three running backs, but Evans provides these special team snaps. And the guy you have to feel, quote, sorry for a little bit, Travion Williams, he's a player. Bengals were fortunate enough that he cleared and they put him on the practice squad. That's a heck of a scenario. To have Travion Williams on your practice squad in case you have an injury at running back. So what I'm talking about, there's depth at a lot of these roster spots, and they're going to be decided by special team snaps in a lot of situations. And sometimes it's a pure numbers game that you don't make the 53-man roster, but get on that 16-man practice squad and make sure that you extend your NFL career, because you're one injury away from showing up on either the Bengals roster or another roster in the NFL. You can't go from practice squad to practice squad, but you could go from another team's practice squad to their 53-man roster. That can happen. Tyson Anderson had kind of an up-and-down game, uneven, inconsistent in my eye. He's going to have to perform on a more consistent basis. Darren Simmons is counting on him as a personal protector and doing some good things on special teams. I'm talking about defensively also. He was a little bit up and down. Obviously, the quarterbacks can all play better. I thought a guy that really had himself a football game, Trey Hill. Trey Hill is solid. Trey Hill is versatile. Trey Hill dresses on Sunday in my book. The guy is, he can get it done. He can play center. He can play left or right guard. and he played center and right guard in this football game because they did want to take a good long look at Cordell Volson, and he did play every snap. Like I was thinking, he played every snap at the left guard position. Why not? Why not? He needs him. Give him every snap you can, and you're trying to evaluate if he's the guy. But Trey Hill played a ton of football as well at the center and right guard positions. So Deontay Smith obviously had holding issues. The first 14 plays, he had multiple holding calls. But, you know, in watching it, I can sympathize with him. I don't want to give him excuses, but both times, the quarterback and the running back, when he was out there blocking, he anticipated them staying outside. For whatever reason, they decided to go inside, and it caused an issue for him. When the defender reacted to the back and quarterback going up inside, he didn't react as he probably will with more experience in that regard, and he got a little handsy. And I'm not making an excuse. There were legitimate calls. I'm not saying they were ticky-tack. They were legitimate. But once he got over that little period, he settled down and played some good snaps at the tackle position. I think Deontay Smith is somebody that has got some potential that you want to tap into. Watching him again play against Myles Garrett in the Cleveland game, the last game of the season last year, and more than holding his own against Myles Garrett, that's a big-time player. He did a hell of a job against him, playing left tackle in that instance. So, you know, the swing tackle is a big, big battle position right now. And I thought Adeniji played much better technique and played much better overall against the Giants than he did in preseason game number one. There's no question about it. I thought that the young defensive lineman Gunter flashed. You know, he did well. I thought Zach Carter, he was okay. I thought he looked a lot better in practice than he did in the game. I want to see him kind of carry over the practice mode into the game mode from a production standpoint a little bit more. He did it in preseason game number one. He was okay in preseason game number two. But both of those guys, they are going to help. They can play. And, you know, miles to go before their rest, not finished product. But, man, they got some serious potential. Zach Carter, Jeff Gunter. Two good selections in this year's draft. It was a great job from a personnel standpoint. So those are some of my thoughts about what I saw in preseason game number one. Those are my thoughts about Jesse Bates. So now that I've thrown my thoughts out there, let's take some of your questions. And who are we starting out with, Dave?
We got to first talk about the giveaway.
Oh, okay.
Thanks to First Star Logistics, as always. We got a great giveaway, a signed Dave Lappin football.
NFL football, the signature, a little Houdet signature right here. National Football League, Wilson, American Football Conference, National Football Conference, official ball. Here we go, official autograph ball.
All you got to do is in the comments during the live stream, not after, but during our live stream, is put in the hashtag Jesse Bates.
Yes, Jesse Bates is back. He's back.
And then at the very end, we will have the draw.
All right.
So that's all you have to do. So we're going to start, and basically we're going to talk about offensive line.
Okay. Any concerns that heading into the regular season, the offensive line not only has zero live snaps as a unit, but zero common snaps among all five? Yes, a little bit of a concern, but the fact that all five of them are four of the five that haven't gotten any snaps, Volson obviously is the one that's gotten a ton of snaps if he starts at left guard. Jackson Carmen has had snaps in the first preseason game. The veteran players have not. Joe, they know what he can do. At the center position, Ted Karras is a member of two Super Bowl winning teams with the Patriots. Alex Kappa, member of a Super Bowl winning team with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. And at the right guard position, L. Collins, my perennial playoff team with the Dallas Cowboys. And they've all seen it. They all know what it's supposed to look like. It'll be like riding a bike. But with that said, yes, I do have some concerns that I think will be alleviated by the fact that all five of them will, in my opinion, hopefully be able to line up against the Rams when they go live practice. Not live, I shouldn't say live, but they go thump, which is full speed for offensive and defensive line and linebackers. And they just don't take running backs to the ground or receivers to the ground. It's not live tackling. they may have live tackling in a period, maybe a goal line period or a short yardage period or whatever. But the offensive and defensive lines are going to be going at it, and linebackers. So I think that the drill, the time that they can spend together in situational football, goal line, short yardage, pass protection, one-on-one, twists and stunts, or two-on-two, and a whole offensive line working against a whole defensive line, five-on-four, and handling twists and stunts and all that sort of thing, getting a feel for how much depth that the guard takes on his set, how you have to adjust yours at the tackle and vice versa, how you're going to be handling twists and stunts. They're all veteran guys. They've all done it before. They've all done it in a bunch of reps, but not with each other. So in my opinion, I would not want to go into a game against the Pittsburgh Steelers where I did not have that feel of a very, very good tempo of movement and twists and stunts and all that sort of thing. One of the more valuable periods, in my opinion, over the 2 days, the Wednesday and Thursday, when they go live blitz drill. Offensive, defensive line against front seven. It's defensive line pass rush. It's linebackers blitzing as part of the twists and stunts. Here come linebackers as well. Now you have to get your eyes at even the second level. Those are all going to be huge, significant snaps. And will it be perfect against the Pittsburgh Steelers in week one? I don't think so. I don't think it'll be perfect for any of the offensive lines in the NFL in week one. I think every offensive line will be playing better in November or October than they are in September. There's no question about that. But I do think that this group will get a feel for each other pretty quickly because they've all experienced it at a high level in the National Football League. I mean, you know, winning Super Bowls, playing in the playoffs, that's a big thing. And it is like riding a bike. It was very interesting to me last week to see Sam Hubbard and LC go into the rehab field and work against each other one-on-one. Sam wanted to get more reps getting off, getting up the football field and pass rush, and LC was working against Sam, and they were getting really good work. Now, and they, you know, it was full go. They had pads on, actually they didn't on that day, but they were mirroring the tempo was full. They just weren't colliding in terms of collision with shoulder pads, helmet, but it was full speed in terms of footwork, tempo, finishing, things of that nature. And they ran a bunch of reps. They only took a little bit of time. It was like almost a 2-minute drill, but they ran, I don't know, I bet 40 or 50 sets against each other. That was good work. That was good work in terms of footwork, timing, hand placement, and then defensively using your hands, setting up rip moves, swim moves, all those. It was good to watch two guys who were hard workers working against each other. It was good to see LC being able to do it, and it was good to see Sam Hubbard giving them that kind of a look. So that those snaps in practice to me are invaluable in getting that first group together. Like you said, five guys playing like one, five components to a fist. You don't think about wrapping four fingers, curling a thumb. Just happens. Involuntary reaction. Five guys playing together. If you got four doing it, now you don't have a strong fist. I mean, everybody's got to get on the same page. And, you know, Volson's a rookie. He isn't taking snaps with Jonah. He hasn't taken snaps with Karras. But, you know, and Karras hasn't taken snaps with either guy in games, either guard. And the guard and tackle haven't taken snaps together. Kappa hasn't taken snaps with anybody on either side of them. But they're all veteran players that have done it other than Volson. So see how quickly they can coordinate themselves, feel comfortable with each other, and play as one, to answer your question.
And a reminder, go back. We had Ted Karras last week.
Yep.
He talks a little bit about Volson, Jackson Carman, the O-line as a group, the work they've been doing. So make sure you go back. And if you've not watched that video, check that video out.
Absolutely. Ted Karras is a pro's pro. Ted Karras knows what he's doing, man. And he's a leader. He's not only a leader of the offensive line. He's a big leader in that offensive line room, but he's a big leader in the entire locker room. Guys look up to him. The guy's won two Super Bowls. That gives you instantaneous credibility. And when he shows he knows of what he speaks, you listen to the dude. And he's got a voice in that locker room. There's no question about it. Tiger blood. What's the best case scenario that actually gets Jesse to sign a long term next year? The best case scenario is Jesse leads the NFL in interceptions. The Bengals win the Super Bowl. And it's like, you can't live without Jesse Bates. The best case scenario for to get Jesse Bates signed to a long-term deal is for him to go out and have his best year. His best year. He had an unbelievable run in the playoffs. Really. And he might have been the Bengals' best player on a snap-to-snap basis in the playoffs. Regular season, can't say that. Can't say that. But in the postseason, when the chips were on the line, Jesse played his best football. So that's what he has to do. Right now, it's like, okay, I'm only making $12.9 million. it just kills me. That's so much money. And it's all guaranteed. That's the thing. When you sign that franchise tag, it's all guaranteed. But that's it. You know, he was looking for more long-term, security, and can understand that. And that was the sticking block. That was the stumbling block with the negotiation. It wasn't necessarily the money over however many years. It was how it was paid, terms and conditions, how much guaranteed. And again, with Watson getting a fully guaranteed contract, other position groups are getting big amounts guaranteed, whether it be safeties, whether it be wide receivers, whether it be whoever. And there was a difference of opinion in the amount guaranteed. So that was the stumbling block. Going to have to wait until after the season. And as far as Jesse's concerned, in the Bengals organization, they want him to have the best year he's ever had. They want him to be a leader of a Super Bowl team. The franchise wants that, so that would be the best case scenario. There's no question. Dave Lennox. Hey, Lap, is it really that big of a deal that Jesse missed as much as he has now because Joey B has missed a bunch of practices too, and everyone has been saying it's not that big of a deal? Very true. Very true. It's both in both cases. Will Joe Burrow be the Joey B that everybody has loved and fallen in love with initially in the very beginning? No. No, he won't be the same Joe Burrow that was performing at such a high level as he tore up the Baltimore Ravens twice and just, you know, had the unbelievable season that he had. It's almost unfair to expect him to play at that level against the Pittsburgh Steelers. But is he playing at a significantly good level? Yeah, and the difference is Jesse Bates isn't coming back from an injury. He's not coming back from surgery. Jesse Bates was just a holdout. So they're in different pots, but I can understand your point. Fact is that they're both missing time. The thing is, Joe Burrow has been there. The mental reps that I talked about, or Jesse went to the suite to see it all unfold before his eyes on the stadium field. He wanted to see the whole football field, the big picture, not just the TV shot, which zooms in on things. He wanted to see all of it and everything that was going on the sideline and on the field of play. So he hasn't taken those mental reps. Joe Burrow's taken every mental rep for a while now. He missed the first few days of practice because he was, you know, immobile basically. But once he could get on a golf cart, he got his butt out there and he was getting every mental rep he could. And now he's progressing. Now he's upright and running. Watching him run sprints again before the game against the Giants at MetLife Stadium, He was striding sprints with Joe Mixon. I was like, damn. And I asked him, I said, Joe, no ill effects, no setbacks. Nope. No pain. Nope. He's good. Just needs to, he lost weight, lost muscle mass. Needs to try to put that on as quickly as he possibly can. That'll get his velocity where he wants it. It's all tied together. But yeah, interestingly enough, Joe Burrow and Jesse Bates, the Bengals are going to be counting on those guys to have big years, and they have not had live action as such, but Joe Burrow's further along in that he has run 11 on 11 snaps. Jesse won't have run any of that, in my opinion, if they put him on the list that I think they're going to put him on, which is the exempt list. He won't, you know, he's not going to be running any of those snaps in live practice. I think they're going to take it easy with him. I think they're going to ramp him up. And get him as ready as they possibly can. And you just have to deal with it. You don't expect Jesse Bates to be playing at the level against the Pittsburgh Steelers that he'll be playing in week one, that he'll be playing in week eight or week 10 or week whatever. It's just, and that's just a fact of life.
Let me ask you this, Dave. everyone knows Jesse Bates, uh-huh. the athletes of today, been working out. It's not like they're taking any time off.
No, he's great shape.
Yeah. But there is a different
football shape.
There's yeah. football shape.
Yeah.
And that's what he's missed.
Yeah. But honestly, in my mind, not playing your 20 of your 22 starters at all. I mean, they're what kind of foot? They have not been hit, taken to the ground. I mean, game speed is a different speed. Game contact is a different contact. They have had very, very little football shape thing. Anchored their pads just a little bit. I asked LC, I said, are you excited about going against the Rams and actually anchoring your pads, as the old saying goes, hitting people and feeling that, wake up the next morning, yeah, that's football. I feel a little bit sore. But after that Steelers game, it is a different sore. Because let me tell you something. Pittsburgh Steelers have a very salty defense that's going to bring it. So, yeah, the football, you can be in the greatest shape. You can run a five-minute mile. You can run a 4.440. You can bench press, 25 reps of 2.25. But then there's football shape. And that's the adjustment that needs to be made. There's no question. Okay, Klaus of 7, looking forward to seeing Jesse and Dax on the field together. So am I. I am looking forward to it. Two very instinctive ball-hawking, playmaking-type players. Dax has some closing speed that you don't see very often. Totally agree. He is he's a guy that has closing speed. He has ability to diagnose and get there. There's no two ways about it. It's going to be very interesting to see what kind of schemes and that Lou Anarumo comes up utilizing both of them on the field at the same time, because they both can do multiple things. They're both not one-trick ponies. Quarterbacks, and they have to come to the line of scrimmage and like, where's Bates? Where's Dax? Jeez, where are these guys? What are they doing this snap? That's a very, very difficult. I mean, it can make it challenging. All of a sudden, your reads become a little bit more hesitant, and that's all you're looking for. In the National Football League, on the back end, you're looking for the quarterback to hold the ball a half beat longer because the pass rush is coming, man, and it's all tied together. If you can make the quarterback have one more moment of being unsure, it could be a sack. If the quarterback diagnosis gets it out quickly, I don't care. You can beat the guy quick at the line of scrimmage. He's going to get the ball out of there before, even if you weren't blocked, before you can run and hit him. I mean, that's just life in the NFL. Anthony Kennedy, Houday, how do you anticipate the coaches controlling the joint practices this week? I expect the competitiveness and intensity to be high. Ramsey and Donald could certainly cause a scuffle. Yeah, I think if I had a controlled practice against the San Francisco 49ers after losing Super Bowl 16 up in Pontiac, Michigan, the following training camp, it would be very competitive, very, very physical. And I think this will be, but I do think that the one thing that you have to bear in mind is the last thing you want to do is have an injury due to a stupid fight that took place in a controlled practice environment that close to your opening of your NFL season. But with that said, guys lose their mind. Guys can lose their mind. It's up to their teammates to make sure that it doesn't get out of hand. Teammates and coaches, the Carolina Panthers and the New England Patriots had their issues when they had their two practices before their preseason game. There were a lot of scuffles, a lot of very physical late hits and things of that nature. Got to control that. And I do think the two head coaches have a relationship with each other that is very, very viable. Zach Taylor and Sean McVay are tied at the hip. I mean, Zach is a protege. He's from the Sean McVay tree. So these guys are on the same page. I think they'll get their coaching staffs and players on the same page as well.
Want to remind everybody, giveaway today, a signed Dave Lappin football, courtesy of First Star Logistics. Hashtag Jesse Bates in the comments. We'll get you in the drawing at the very end.
All right. Get yourself a autographed football. Tiger Blood. Back again. All right. Tiger Blood. Here we go. Number 2. What's the chances cornerback George makes a big impact on defense this year? I talked about him already in a little soliloquy to start practice off. This guy, Alan George, played well. There's a role. He played well against the Giants. There's a role available. Cam Taylor-Britt won't make the dance in the opener necessarily. So there's a role at the cornerback position. Alan George went after it against the Giants. He played very well at corner. You know, one guy that's competing with him is another undrafted college player. Delonte Hood did not play as well. So right now, you've got George saying there's an opening, and it's an opening due to injury and surgery, a core muscle that Cam Taylor-Britt had to get taken care of, core muscle injury. I don't wish that on him, but now that there's a opportunity, a position, I'm going to try to go get it. And he responded. Smart guy out of Vanderbilt, gets it. Smart football player. Not only good IQ, good football IQ. And he made some plays. He showed up. That's what you have to do. Logan B. Uday. Speaking of Logan, how about Logan Wilson kicking a 33-yard field goal that basically got the Bengals off the practice field a little bit early. They didn't have to do some conditioning and all that sort of thing. He hit a 33-yarder. I asked him, in high school, he was a place kicker punter. And I asked him, what was the longest field goal he made in high school? 53 yards, made a 60-yarder in practice. He said, that's when he was at his prime. I said, you're in your prime. He said, I'm in my prime as a kicker. But Logan Wilson and Logan B, you reminded me of the Logan. Uday Lap, what did you think about Volson? Do you think they're looking at bringing Quinton and Hopkins in for depth? I don't think they're looking in that area. I think that Volson and Jackson Carmen, Volson, one is going to start at left guard and the other one is going to be a swing guard. That's the bottom line. And the thing is, like I said, Trey Hill, he's the guy that has just quietly gone about his business. Everybody's talking about these two young guys at the left guard position. Trey Hill just keeps sawing wood, playing good, strong football. This kid's base. Take a look at Trey Hill's lower body the next time you get a chance. It is thick. It is strong. He doesn't get bold, man. He's a load. Played at Georgia. Pretty darn good football. You know, in that conference is same as Alabama, that SEC they call it, you know. So, I do think they're going to stay fairly young in that offensive line in the interior. But if there's injuries, you know, if Quinton Spain or Hopkins are out there, obviously they're on the Bengals short list because they know what they can do and they know how to get a hold of them. Close to seven again. Should we be worried about our first-tier lines chemistry? Run a lot of zone schemes, rely on communication. Seemed to be an issue at times last year. Guys, we added a pro vets. That's the case. I don't know how concerned we should be about our first-tier line because they haven't played yet. That's the thing. They've shown in their prior NFL careers that they can play, but they haven't played side-by-side. And, you know, that's a factor. There's no doubt. If I'm playing next to Anthony Munoz and you get used to playing again with a guy of that caliber, and then you're with another team and you're playing against a tackle that is nowhere near as athletic and as talented as Anthony Munoz, you have to make a lot of adjustments as the guy playing next to him. It's huge. It's a lot of adjustments. So you do have to get a feel for each other. You do have to, establish that chemistry. Like I said, five playing as one. You're making that fist. It's an involuntary reaction. You don't have to think about it. You know, I remember when we were going really well, Super Bowl 16 year in 1981-82 season. Communication, it was just like a nod. I mean, we didn't even have to talk to each other. It was just like we talk about something in the huddle. You know, if we see this, we're going to see this. Come to the line of scrimmage, we're on the same page, look at each other, nod. If the communication was extremely well orchestrated and done. And that's what can happen between guys that are veteran guys that have played together for a while. These guys are all veteran guys, but they haven't played together for any period of time. That can come quickly, though. based on prior experience. I mean, there's only so many ways to block people. So you understand what combinations and how to go about it. It's just terminology. They're calling it something different. There's only so many ways the defense can line up. These guys have seen all of them. Thing is, different teams call it different things. You have to unlearn and relearn. Basically, you're unlearning old languages of communication and relearning new languages. But the fact is, you've seen it all. You know what you're supposed to do and how you're supposed to do it. You just got to make sure that the communication part of it, the language, is all there. And my understanding is that they've been taking mental reps all training camp and communicating the whole time. While they're watching tape in the offensive line room, they'll sit right next to each other. Karras, Kappa, Collins sit right next to each other, all three of them, like they're in the game, and they're watching tape, and they're just making calls, just like they would in a game. So the mental reps, I'm not as concerned about blown assignments, miscommunication, as I am about guys, you know, oh, boy, that ET happened because I didn't think you were going to set that deep, and that didn't get penetration. I couldn't quite get there, you know, to consume him, and you get the loop and tackle, things like that. That sometimes you have to work out just at game speed. So that can happen quickly, though, and I'm not that concerned about it because they've done it before. They know what it's supposed to look like. Brian, what up, Dave? Great to have Bates back. Totally concur. Big time to get Jesse Bates back. How much of the inter-squad scrimmages with the Rams will the first-teamers play? Houdet. I think the first-teamers will play a bunch. I don't think Jesse Bates is going to be amongst those first-teamers. Like I said, I think there's a good chance that Jesse Bates will be on an exempt list. After a holdout like that, that's kind of common practice. You don't hold out, show up, and go at the Rams the next day. You know, you have to ramp up, and for the physical part of it, like we talked about, there's conditioning, and he's in great shape, both, I'm sure, strength and cardiovascular and all that. But then there's football shape. And the first 4 days of training camp, they don't even wear pads. I mean, they ramp guys up by collective bargaining agreement. So they're not going to throw Jesse Bates out there and beat him up, I don't think, right away with the Rams. But he will be getting the mental reps. And it is good to get Jesse Bates back. And I think that he will play against the Steelers. The question is, what role will he play? And how big of a role will that role be that he will play? We shall see. Victor. You think Huber is our punter? Well, I will say that Kevin Huber had his best week of punting last week before the Giants game. And at that point, I think Darren Simmons decided, okay, I know what Kevin Huber can do. I'm not exactly sure what Drew Crispin can do, particularly in a game situation. So, Huber, you can rotate in as a holder with Drew Crispin, and that's what they did. They alternated as holders. But Crispin took all the punts. He punted three times. Had a good average, but he didn't have the hang time you're looking for. His longest punt was returned a bunch of yards, almost 20 yards, and he had to make the tackle before he knocked the player out of bounds. He's a good athlete, and he covered, ran, you know, physical, wasn't shy about sticking his head in there. That's not his job, though. His job is to hang time. All these punts, and he averaged like 48 yards a punt. Not one was fair caught. What does that tell you? It wasn't hanging up there, and the coverage was coming down in the face of the return guy. It was a low trajectory return guy. They always look, where's the coverage? You talk about a kamikaze roll. You're standing back there looking up at the punt, and out of the corner of your eyes, you see the gunners, and they're coming full speed at you. And as the gunner's closing, the punt's still 10 yards in the air, and you're like, what do I do? I got to catch it and try to make this guy miss. He's going 100 miles an hour. You have to make a decision. A lot of times, sometimes they'll fair catch. So if he had good hang time, I think there might have been a fair catch in there. And then the other thing that Kevin Huber is further along than Drew Crispin in is directional punting. You know, putting the ball between the numbers and the sideline on the left side of the football field. And that's where the punt team goes and covers. And if you're thinking the punter's going to put the ball there, and then he punts it over to the other numbers on the right side of the field, you're done as a coverage team. I mean, the punter has basically betrayed you, and you got to readjust your path to cover, and returns come as a result of that. So there's a lot of things, hang time, directional punting. Did I think Chrisman, even if Chrisman crushed it, did I think he was going to win the job by being the guy, only guy that punted? No. But did I think it was going to be more of a dogfight? Yes. I think if Kevin Huber continues to punt like he did during the week against the Giants, he had his best week, I thought, of camp. You know, it's hard to knock off the incumbent that Darren Simmons knows and has been to battle with and knows exactly how he reacts to thing and plus the things and plus the fact that Harris and Huber are such an unbelievable tandem for Money Mac. And I thought the biggest upset of the day was Money Mac missing a 58-yarder. But that snap from Adamitis was a little bit high, and it had a little bit of an impact. It pulled it a little bit left. When you've got Harris and Huber automatic in that operation, telling you, it has to be a knockout punch. And do I think that Chrisman knocked out Huber against the Giants on Sunday night? No, I don't.
Last call to get in on the giveaway from First Star Logistics, assigned Dave Lapham Football. Hashtag Jesse Bates in the comments is needed. We want to thank everybody who joined us for the live stream. We've got about 4 or 5 more minutes to go. And then also, if you're not subscribed to In the Trenches, please do so. Also, hit the like button. That helps us with the algorithms and get more people out there who are Bengal fans who find out more about what Dave's doing here on In the Trenches, brought to you by First Star Logistics.
So we've got Mr. Whisper. Dave, I'm a little worried about our depth at cornerback, especially with injuries hitting the group already before the season. Do you see them addressing it or just hoping for the best? It's a good question, Mr. Whisper. And, you know, they could potentially address it. And that's the thing. We talked about, an opportunity presenting itself and Alan George stepping up, and Delonte Hood didn't step up quite as much as Alan George. And again, that's just one preseason game against the Giants. But he did play again. The thing is, the encouraging thing about the Giants-Bengals preseason game was the Giants had their number ones out there into the second quarter, particularly up front. And I thought the front seven played pretty well. I thought it was, you know, a decent performance because it wasn't the Bengals starters against the Giants starters. It was the Bengals backup against the Giants starters on both sides of the football. Now, the Bengals didn't take advantage of opportunities because, gosh, man, they had short field after short field and ended up kicking field goals. You know, they go on 4 plays, minus 2 yards, 4 plays, 2 yards, and kick field goals. I mean, gosh, they could have been up. And they had 3 short fields right away. Could have went up 21-0 in a perfect world. But you got to figure to get at least 13, you know, points out of that, maybe 17. And they got 9. So put themselves in a hole there. But yeah, it's I forgot what the question was. Got off on the tangent there. But a cornerback, the depth of cornerback, that is a concern. And I do think that, again, not only are these guys fighting the Bengals corners, safeties, wide receivers, tight ends that play special teams, linebackers, fighting all those guys. They're fighting all the guys that were in that position and are on the waiver wire. And they may say, wow, this 7th cornerback that got waived by so-and-so is much better than our 7th cornerback, and he can play special teams. Let's grab him. So, man, it's no guarantee you've made the team just because you survived the Bengals' final cut. You can make roster moves, and you're always, when you're on the back end of the roster like that, and you're a utility guy playing special teams, every single week you're in jeopardy, man. I mean, so yeah, the Bengals are always looking to upgrade, and they're looking up to upgrade the corner position. They're looking to upgrade every position that is a depth position on this football team. No two ways about it. Absolutely. Vagari, is Sample or Mitchell, if they're still hurt by game one, number 3 tight end is either Moss for catching or Rigg for blocking, or another tight end that I just talked about that gets let go by a team that they feel can do a little bit of both. Moss is not much of a blocker, and honestly, doesn't run well enough. He can catch it. There's no question he can catch it, but he doesn't run real well. Rigg has got, in my mind, with the big body he's got and the way he, did you see the trap lock he had when he came across the formation and just kicked out the defensive end, big run ripped up the gut. I think it was Evans that ran the ball up the gut after that kick out block, big time, very physical play. So I think Sample is going to make the dance, I think, in week one. Mitchell, I don't think will. I think Sample will. That's only two tight ends. I don't know if you're going to want a third. Because let's remember now, you say a Sample or Mitchell, the third tight end. You got Hurst, and he's the guy. I mean, that's the number one tight end. And he can do both. I mean, he can block, he can catch. And then I think Sample will make it. Sample's more of a blocker than a receiver. So what are you looking for in that third tight end? Are you looking for a better receiver? Or are you looking for a blocker? And again, it's not just the Bengals back end of the tight end group. It's the entire league. And who's going to be out there? Who's going to be available? It's going to be interesting to find out. That is life in the NFL. It's a competitive environment. Training camps are always very, very pressure filled.
This brings me to a question I have, Dave. Mm-hmm. When does it come a point for an NFL team to sit there, and we'll use the tight end position as the example with Sample and Mitchell, to where you say, you know what? We really like what someone younger is doing for us in camp, and you have to make that cut to a veteran and go with a younger player. When does it get to that point where you say, hey, we're going to cut bait here, we're going to go in a new direction?
I think, having seen that in many instances, the younger player has to be at least as good. You have to say, okay, I'm not giving anything up by cutting this veteran player other than experience. But talent-wise, this kid can give me everything this veteran can give me, and there's upside there. And I know exactly what the upside is of this veteran. This younger guy has more upside. That's the bottom line. You have to, with a veteran player, it has to be a knockout because you're battling that experience. Because one of the most important things that a coach has in a veteran player is trust. And trust is a very, very big word. And it's when you have trust amongst your teammates to each other, your coaching staff to each other, your coaches to your teammates to your coaches, it's huge. That's another thing that the Bengals had last year. Trust and respect, man, are two massive intangibles. So if you have a veteran player that is trusted and respected by the organization, the young guy has to be at least as gifted as he is physically, and show more upside, because that guy's got some support, got some backing in the organization, that veteran guy. Crypt Keeper. Mr. Lapham, is Ben Brown out for the season? Yes, he is. He detached his bicep, had surgery to reattach his bicep. Ben Brown is out for the year, and Ben Brown was making a push to at least be a practice squad player and, you know, maybe be a swing guy in the interior. But as I mentioned, I think the interior swing guy is Trey Hill. The swing tackle, Prince's injury, and he's got a bicep problem himself. His injury came at a very inopportune time for him. Deontay Smith had some holding penalties, but once he settled down and got his feet underneath him, he played pretty well. And he has shown on tape that he can play against pretty good people. So that swing tackle position is going to be interesting. And again, remember, with all of these back of the roster things, the waiver wire becomes a factor. I mean, somebody may have let go of a fourth tackle that's a better player than the third tackle that you got on your roster. I mean, it happens. It happens in the league. You know, a team doesn't have better players than in every position group than you, or that team would win the Super Bowl every time, every year. But there are teams that have, boy, they're stacked at linebacker. They're stacked in the offensive line. They're stacked at corner. But they're not stacked other places. But sometimes, you know, this is where your personnel study becomes big. You know, you look, where are the strengths and weaknesses on a position group basis for all 32 teams in the NFL? Who's going to let go of good football players? Do you want to try to consummate a trade? Because if this player hits the waiver wire, the problem the Bengals have, they're picking 31. 30 teams go before them in selecting it. So if a good guy hits the waiver wire, there's far from a guarantee. Probably very odds are very unlikely he's going to make it all the way to 31. So now you try to start to consummate a trade like they did, you know, last year when they got B.J. Hill and they let Billy Price go. Billy Price isn't even a Giant anymore. B.J. Hill signed a long-term contract extension. Billy Price wasn't New York playing for the football Giants. B.J. Hill went to the Super Bowl with the Cincinnati Bengals and got a big, long, profitable contract extension. Who do you think won that trade? The Bengals can consummate that kind of a trade, you know, to strengthen a spot in their in a position group that they think could use it. They're going to do it. And it doesn't happen overnight. They've already been working on these things. The Billy Price, B.J. Hill trade, they were working on that a week into training camp. It was a 2-3 week process. And any trades that they're trying to consummate, they've been working on for a while. So we'll see if any of that materializes. More times than not, trades don't materialize. It takes two to tango. Two teams have to be in concert to make the trade. Unfortunately for the Bengals, the Giants felt a huge need in the interior of their offensive line at the center guard position. And they thought Billy Price would remedy that issue. And of course, the Bengals wanted depth at the interior. Three technique with B.J. Hill remedied that problem. Worked out well. Is that about a wrap, Dave?
Almost.
One more?
Let's go with this. One more.
John Hambrecht. All right.
I don't think we want to get into the Joe Burrow future contract because we all know he's going to be very wealthy.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. It's a matter of how much. And it's a matter of terms and condition. Not how much. How much is going to be guaranteed for that pocket, because Deshaun Watson changed that whole dynamic. Tell us about Trey Hendrickson. Is he just a different animal? I read where the O-line was mad at him for insisting on a sack. I remember just sitting on the bench after the Bengals won the AFC championship game. Trey Hendrickson is a competitive, talented football player. He's got first-step quickness. He understands the finer points of the game. He loves the chess match of breaking down offensive linemen, watching the tape, trying to determine where the weaknesses are and what move he can utilize to get an advantage. He's a very, very patient pass rusher. I've never seen a guy with that much patience, honestly. He will wait till he has the advantage and then make the move. It's almost like I'm gonna react to what you do. There's an action and there's a reaction. He always makes the offensive lineman make the first action. He doesn't want to take the first action and let the offensive lineman react. That waiting game is fun to watch with Trey Hendrickson sometimes. And boy, he's very serious about his craft. And once he gets focused, don't mess with him. Yeah, the offensive line, he was complaining about a sack, and the entire offensive line kind of grouped around him and started pushing him around and having some fun with him. And he came off the field. You see that? The entire offensive line, you know, came after me on that one. You know, it's like he and Sam Hubbard are a good duo. They elevate each other's play. You know, it's almost like the kind of competition you want, like a friendly competition internally that just makes both players better. They do an unbelievable job. The H boys on the edge for the Cincinnati Bengals. I mean, the Bengals got Trey Hendrickson, and he blessed them with a 17-sack season, counting the regular season and the postseason. Can't ask for much more than that.
That brings us to the end. We're going to give away the signed Dave Lapham football. What will happen is after the drawing, we will go into the comments to the person who is drawn. I will give them an email address. They will email our guy, Isaac Carpenter. And then Isaac's going to send to that email and kind of confirm, give you something to do, because we have to kind of go to a two-way authorization now, because people want that signed football so bad, they're willing to kind of cheat for it, Dave. So,
no way.
Yes.
No way.
So, but let's do this. We're going to get into right now the giveaway.
Hashtag Jesse Bates. There we go. The man. the newsmaker today. We got some great names. Oh, Scott Fulkerson, the big winner. Lucky you, Scott. You get yourself a football for your collection. Hopefully you have more than one football in that collection. But if not, this is the start of a collection for you.
Like I said, I will go into where Scott put in the comment, and we will give the email address for our guy Isaac, and then it'll get handled from that side there to get you that football that the one Dave's actually holding will be sent
there
to
you. There we go.
So any last comments, Dave, before we
walk holder away? For the place kicker. I'm just very excited to watch the Rams and the Bengals in these two controlled environment practices. Usually there's a lot of good work that takes place there. And we will we'll keep you updated about that, Dave. We'll file a little bit of a report after, particularly the Wednesday practice. That's going to be the big physical one, I think. It'll start tapering off the closer to the game that they get. But Wednesday should be fun and frolicking, to say the least. I think it's going to be very, very profitable for both football teams. I think both teams are going to get a lot out of it. I can't wait to see it. It's going to be big.
We appreciate everybody being on the live stream and also checking out Dave Lapham in the Trenches throughout the week. And who have subscribed, please, if you haven't done so yet, please do. Also hit the like button. That helps overall with the algorithm for more people. When they go to YouTube, they see the videos getting posted and allows us to grow the channel to where we feel it should be. And we can't thank people enough for where we are over just over a year and a half. It's been fun. It's going to be an exciting year, Dave. So
it's fun. And again, you fans, I mean, the questions you ask and the response that you give us, it's rewarding. I mean, you guys, we're doing it because you guys are so intelligent and you appreciate the game of football played at the highest level in the National Football League. And the Bengals are hot off that AFC championship. Run it back time.
Thank you, everybody.
At First Star Logistics, we're a very strict company that really puts the pressure on our employees. Brakes? What are those?
That's what I'm talking about, Icky. Get the body right, then the mind's right. You know,
gotta get that body right.
That's right. Yes, sir.
Become a star with a chance to earn the highest commission percentages in the industry as a freight broker agent. Check out firststarlogistics.com.